Welcome back to Season 9 of Talking with Traders. We're into the fifth year of this podcast that began in 2020. Once again, IG have come on board as the sponsor of the podcast. We're truly grateful to have such a global leader in online trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the show, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from various players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Or if you watch these interviews on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and give us a thumbs up and leave a comment if you wish. We welcome the engagement. Once again, thank you to IG for sponsoring this podcast into its fifth year, and thank you, listeners, for your continued support. Now, let's get on to this week's interview. For this episode, I'm doing something a bit different. It's the last episode for 2024, and I've decided to be a bit reflective. Hosting this podcast is a privilege, as I get to question some brilliant traders. We've been at it for nearly 5 years, and in that time, I've recorded over 110 interviews. Certain interviews have really stood out for me. So for this episode, I've decided to compile a bunch of clips from some of my most memorable interviews of the past year. The clip I'll start with is from Charlie Burton of charliebertontrading.com. He made the really interesting point about verbalizing your intentions and how actually verbalizing your trading strategy allows your brain to process the information in a different way within your neural pathways. This is something to really think about if you're stuck at home trading by yourself without being accountable to anyone. Let's take a listen. Many traders, many coaches talk about, you know, this thing of view every trade as one of the next 1,000 trades. And again, that's such an easy thing to rationalize. And yet, when you're in the moment and you're trading and you're in that, it's like your life depends on this one trade and the outcome of this one trade. And I guess, again, that talks to this primal wiring in our brains about how you want to grab that profit, snatch it and take it while it's on the table in the fear that it's going to disappear, not really realizing that, yeah, it is just one of the next 1,000 trades. And of the next 1,000 trades, you know, expect a big number of them to be losers. It's just part of the nature of this game, right?
I think, and we can use that, and I use that a lot. This is just 1 trade in the next 1,000 trades, to try and desensitize the importance that we allocate to a given trade. But self-talk is also really helpful. So just saying, I can't afford to bank this profit early. You know, yeah. To really try and use self-talk. Psychologists have proven that if you talk out loud, then you fire different neural pathways. So if you're just internalizing anything and you're just sat there at your desk clicking away, then you're firing a completely different neural pathways to once you talk out loud. Like if someone was sat next to you saying, why are you about to bank this profit early here? Because if someone was sat next to you, you'd say, I'm not going to do that. So psychologists have proven that if you talk out loud, you fire a different neural pathway and say, actually, I can't afford to take this. Because what we mean by that is, like you've just said, over the next 100 trades, if I'm banking those winners too soon, ultimately, I'm going to lose money or make way less than I should be. I'm going to massively underperform the true potential of the approach that I've got. So using self language for me is a massively important dialogue that every trader should have. Just like if you had someone sat or you think about even taking a trade.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it comes down to sort of an accountability, I suppose. And like you say, if you had someone sitting next to you, or you're sitting in a dealing room, or in this day and age, you know, when we're all working from home, some sort of a virtual dealing room, maybe a Discord channel or something similar. Having that accountability actually is really helpful. And I guess this is what I also want to come to in terms of the work that you do. I mean, you're pretty transparent about the trades you're taking within your community at charlieburtontrading.com. I guess doing that, having that accountability with your clients, with your followers, and then, like you say, the act of physically talking about your trades, physically speaking about where your stop loss is going to be or where your target's going to be and what your intended plan is, it kind of keeps you accountable, right? Because if you deviate from that plan tomorrow, you have to go and tell your audience, well, you know what, I actually ignored my stop loss today, or I actually cut my winner but too soon because I was, you know, snatching at a profit, then you just look silly. So that's really important. And Austin Silver is the founder at ASFX. I chatted to him some time ago about the foundational aspects that need to be in place before anyone should consider quitting their job and going into full-time trading. A lot of people come to me, and I'm sure they probably come to you as well, and come with the story that they want to quit their job and take up trading because they believe that they can make a living from trading and they can replace their income from trading. It's quite a scary prospect usually, and I usually talk people out of it as much as I can. But I mean, what are some of the foundational elements that one would need to have in place, assuming that you would actually say, yeah, cool, you're actually ready to go and try and trade for a living? I mean, it's a tall ask. I think it's
it
a
is.
Very tall ask, but
it's a tall ask.
What kind of fundamental foundational things do you look for?
Well, one,
I
think it would be,
think of that.
Yeah, it would be, where are you in the world and what are your expenses? If you live in the Dominican Republic and you need $1,000 a month to live, this is a different conversation than if you live in Florida like me and have a kid and I need $15,000 a month to live a decent life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think it's all about your expenses that first. Second would be, no one should be just dropping one stream of income to pick up another stream of income that is a business where you're going to lose money. That doesn't make any sense. Trading is a business where you will lose money some months and some years. Why would you quit and cut off one stream for a stream that could actually hurt you more? Like, that mathematically just doesn't make any sense, right? So the best advice for those people, figure out how much money you need to live. I would also, in the meantime, before you quit your job, pay off all your debt, get rid of everything. And then once you know how much you need a safety net. And I also think not just a couple of months, I would really say a year safety net at least. And I would not just go all in on trading. I'm the same as you. I do not recommend that for anybody. I think having multiple streams of income is the only way to ensure that you and your family can eat during whatever 10, 15, 20 year period we're about to go through with very high inflation, things continuing to get expensive. Why would you want to risk your livelihood on just one thing? What if your brokerage gets shut down? What if you get banned from trading because you're in this one country that's now banned from trading the asset you like to trade? It's too much eggs in one basket. So whether you start a new business and you just do a little side hustle in your non-trading hours, trading is not an all-day thing. No one needs to be at the desk all day as a retail trader. You can make plenty of money without being stuck. So go out. Like, I have a guy here in States named Akil. Akil is a track coach. I used to live near him. He does track coach. He gets paid a little bit of money for that, I'm sure. Nothing crazy, but it keeps him off the desk and it keeps him diversified a little bit. He also has a coaching business. I think I'm big on personal branding, you know? So I tell people, like, with digital marketing nowadays, go listen to Gary Vaynerchuk. You can easily start a personal brand and you can start a blog. I mean, of course, everybody here loves trading, but Garth, what else do you like doing? Like, you like sports? You want to do a cricket blog? You want to, like, you know what I mean? You can do, there's so much money out there. People just don't want it. You got to want it. So if you want it, you can go all in on your trading, but you can be all in on trading while still having other streams of income. Make sure you don't go on. So that's the big thing.
Okay. Are successful traders born, or can anyone learn to do this?
No, they're definitely not born, because this is not like, this isn't like basketball where, like, you would have to be born tall and huge and, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's where you could say, like, Shaq was born to play basketball. Like, look at him. You know what I'm saying? Traders, it's not definitely something you're born with. You have to be built into it. And I think that's why it's very difficult, because you have to build yourself into this person who, in a lot of cases, does the opposite of what our human instinct, our DNA, would want us to do. Like, our human instinct tells us, hey, you want to, like in trading especially, it's the disposition effect where you want to hold your losers long and hope and cut your winners fast so you just realize the gain. Well, that's the opposite of what we're supposed to do in trading. So to be good in trading, anybody can do it. It has to be someone who is coachable and they can rewire their brain. That's the thing no one really talks about. It's like the best traders, none of them just walked onto Wall Street and figured it out. They had a mentor. They had a coach. Every single one of them had somebody who worked in the on the pit, who worked on a floor, who worked somewhere, and they taught him how to trade. And you know that because that I know is similar to how you were brought up. You've had mentors in your life who have made huge impressions. Yeah. I had a guy on the podcast recently who was taught by a market maker at Goldman Sachs. Again, he's a now retail trader, not doing anything that he learned over there. But that experience, that coaching, that was his upbringing. Yeah. So I think that's the key.
Journaling is something that comes up again and again in the interviews I do. Most of the traders I speak to are very strong on the idea of journaling, both journaling all their trades, but also journaling about the mental aspects of their trading. In that respect, I spoke to the man who was heavily involved with the development of the Trader's Mind Journal, high performance coach Steve Ward. I want to talk to you, Steve, about journaling. I know this is something you're very big on, so big, in fact, that you've published the Trader's Mind Journal, which we'll talk about in a moment. But I've certainly applied some of the journaling techniques that you talk about in Bulletproof Trader. And I must say that I've noticed a marked improvement in my general approach to trading, general feeling of well-being. And the things that are included in the journal are quite interesting. And I want to chat to you about this and ask you, obviously you think it's important for trading. So I'm not going to say, do you think it's important? Yep. It is important. We know this. But more particularly, what aspects do you think should be covered in a journal for a trader?
Okay. So there are different types of journals. I think that's important to recognize. So we might have the traditional, let's call it the trading log. You know, so I keep a record of here's the trade I made, here's when I made it, entries, exits, position sizing, how I managed the trade, and a review of the trade. So, and again, I think that's a fundamental process to have in place for all traders. Gets tricky for some of my traders who are trading hundreds of times per day. So it has to be done in a different way. But for most people trading maybe from home, making a few trades a day, that's, for me, it's a basic discipline.
Yeah.
The other side of the journal is, for me, is the person who is the trader. So it's the psychological journal, and it's also the journal which covers two key themes, which are self-awareness and self-improvement. So for me, the core focus of the journal is to enable a person to increase their levels of self-awareness around thought patterns, emotional patterns, behavioral patterns, so they can start to get a sense of what they are. Which is good. Then with that awareness, not to have awareness for the sake of awareness, but to have that awareness so we get the reflective process, hopefully we get some insights into what we're doing. And then what the journal is ideally placed to do is to then turn that into action. The person can then take action on that. Again, now they're reflecting on the action they've taken. So it's always reflection, insight, action. And through that process, over time, hopefully make changes around mindset, around how they manage emotions, how they manage their behaviors, you know, forming habits, processes, such that through the process, there is like an evolution of the person. So for me, journaling just for the sake of journaling is just a waste of time.
Yeah.
For me, it has, you know, it's for anything. What's the intention behind it? Why am I doing this? Why am I going to commit time and energy to this? What is the value? And so in the journal that we've created, the Trader's Mind Journal, that's what it's really about. It's about a combination of awareness raising, so reflective questions, but it's also about mental preparation, which I think is really important, turning up to the markets ready mentally and emotionally, as well as technically and tactically. And then having that process of improvement through, you know, goal setting, maybe it's weekly improvement targets in terms of behaviors to improve and work on, creating the process, reflect on the process, reflect on yourself. So I'll say, yes, self-awareness, self-improvement really is kind of the core to that. And I think people who do it long enough, you see the value in doing that. But there's also an extra value, which is really important, which is when we get the chance to write down our thoughts and to write down our emotions, particularly how we're thinking and feeling about ourselves and the markets. In those moments, what we are doing, which is really powerful, is we are recognizing that these are thoughts and feelings we have about the market that we are writing down.
Yeah.
So it might be, for example, that I'm really angry about what I've done. Maybe I broke one of my rules and I feel really angry about that.
Yeah.
And in the moment, I might just think, I'm angry about that. And then I'm kind of in the emotion of anger. But once I get into the journaling and I start to write down about, you know, here's what I did in the markets and it made me feel angry. So now I notice that I'm writing down that I had a feeling that I call anger about something that I did.
Yeah.
And that's called diffusion. And what it does is it kind of creates a space between the experience we had and us as the person, which is really powerful. And there's a processing that goes on while we're doing that. So it's quite cathartic. And the research, again, supports that. You know, people who write down about their emotions and their thoughts on a regular basis, increased objective well-being, reduced levels of stress measured by cortisol, the stress hormones are measured biologically. So it does have a real, you know, psychological and physical impact on us, that process, which again is important because you don't want to be carrying the frustrations and the emotions and the thoughts of today's trading into tomorrow's.
Mm-hmm.
So we need that way of kind of almost, you know, in a crude terminology, metaphorically, like flushing the toilet. We need to kind of get the stuff out, reset, go again. And if we're not getting it out, then where is it? It's in. And if it's in, and maybe we're not as aware of it, then it's influencing outside of conscious awareness. And we'll only notice it when we look back.
Yeah. Okay. Just to look at some of the stuff I do in my own journal, and some of this certainly has been inspired by the things that I've done or read and listened to in Bulletproof Trader and things. I'm very interested in the physiological link between the physiological well-being and the psychological well-being of trading. So to that extent, some of the stuff that I include in my journal every day is I rate, how do I feel on a scale of 1 to 10, with 0 being very unhappy and, you know, with and 10 being elated, right? On where is it, right? And then other physiological stuff, like how many glasses of water did I drink today? Hydration is an important part of our physiology. Have I done any exercise today? How much sleep did I get last night? You know, these sort of things. And I just plot them in the journal. And what's interesting, and I've found over the years, is that I then go back over time and actually look at these metrics. Because these are things you can obviously measure, you know? How many hours of sleep did you get? You can check it. It's so interesting that there's a very positive correlation between how well I'm trading and how well I'm feeling. So, you know, if I'm regularly feeling like a 7 or an 8 or a 9 out of 10, you know, day after day after day, well, strangely enough, that's a time when I'm generally trading well, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know whether one causes the other. I mean, there's obviously a causal relationship, I suppose. Yeah. If I'm trading well, making money, I feel happy. But it's also a case that I think if I'm feeling happy and, you know, upbeat about life, maybe I make better decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a good thing to bring up because a lot of my work, whilst it might be performance and psychology, a big piece of my work is also physiology. So I'm like a mind-body guy. For me, it's not two separate entities. So the brain sits inside the body. Brain's about 2% of our body weight, and it's about 20 to 25% of our calorific consumption.
Okay.
And it's most energy hungry when we are doing things like planning, decision-making, strategizing, when we're exercising self-control and willpower. So anything kind of higher level cortical functioning requires more fuel. Now, if you think about trading, it's decision-making, it's risk-taking. We're navigating uncertainty. We have to plan. We have to react. We have to exercise self-control and discipline. All that's high-order brain function. So if the brain is under-fueled, if there's not sufficient resources in the brain to do that or to do it well, then it will play out in our trading. And this is why with my institutional clients over the last probably 7 or 8 years, we've done increasingly larger amounts of work around the physiology. And you know, you talked about trading well. I see that's a phrase I use, but it's two-edged. Trading well, as in I'm trading well, as in I feel well, and I'm trading well, as in I'm making good trading decisions. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, trading well, if you think about well-being and then high performance, people often think about, you know, I want to be a high performance, I want to trade well, but they don't appreciate the importance of well-being in enabling you to trade well as such.
Yeah.
And so for me, and this is true in all high performance, and we're seeing it now in sport where they've been two almost separate entities. They go, no, you can't separate well-being and high performance. They go hand in hand. You have to look at both. And it's true for traders and investors exactly the same. You know, the state of the body will impact the state of the brain. You know, our capacity to make good decisions, or our capability to make good decisions, depends on our capacity that's available. So sleep, hydration, as you said, Garth, nutrition, feeling rested and recovered, our level of physical fitness and well-being, all of that at some level is impacting what goes on cognitively and emotionally. So, and again, you're right. You know, we can do that in very simple ways, just recording down hours of sleep. We could record down just as you did, you know, mood. Yeah. I often get, or we do in the Trader's Mind Journal, we have a, you know, a 1 to 5 scale for stress. So just feeling of stress, 1 for energy, just very simple day-to-day subjective self-calibration. But again, if you do it regularly, then it becomes quite useful. I've got some traders that do that during the course of the day. So they track stress, energy, and mood, start of trading day, mid trading day, end of trading day. Some do it every hour. It just depends on what, you know, whatever's useful.
Yeah.
But again, subjective. Other traders, other clients, obviously we've got wearables now. So we use the wearables. We've also got some higher level, more clinical grade technology that we use as well. So we can capture the data and the stats. Because things like stress and fatigue, particularly, do play out in terms of risk aversion. If you're highly stressed and you're highly fatigued, you become more risk averse as a general rule for most people.
Right.
So it does impact decision making. It does impact risk sensitivity. So it does matter. And, you know, it's another thing which actually we have some controllability over.
Position sizing is a critical aspect of trading success. I spoke to Tom Sosnoff, the founder of Tasty Trade and Tasty Live, which was acquired by IG last year. When I asked him about the common mistakes that amateur traders make, he made the point that incorrect position sizing is right up there amongst the biggest errors. Tom, on your Tasty Trade, on your Tasty Live show, you've got a show called Fast Market, which I find very interesting. I enjoy watching that. And that's where you receive trade ideas from your clients, from your followers, and you assess them live. And you've got an incredible knack for being able to analyze a trade and decide very quickly whether it's a good idea or not a good idea. You then put those trades on in most cases, from what I've seen.
Sure.
But from that, you've obviously seen a hell of a lot of what retail traders are looking at in terms of doing in their own trading. And from that, I guess you also get to see a lot of the potential errors that people make, amateur traders make with their trading. What are some of the most common mistakes that you see people making when they send in those ideas and you have to analyze them?
Well, when our customers send in ideas, they're usually pretty hardcore Tasty traders. So they kind of know, like, you know, the direction, the kind of, you know, strategies I like and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's why I trust them blindly, because I would trust our own viewers and our own customers way more than I trust any professional in this business. Believe me on that. But I have been around the block more times than I care to talk about. And I think, you know, for me, I am, if I was to, well, obviously the simplest answer to what is the biggest mistake customers make, and the answer is they trade too big.
Okay.
You know, I mean, they're, you can talk about discipline, you can talk about, you know, strategy, you can talk about lots of things, but the reality that that customers, you know, the reality of mistakes that customers make is that they trade too big, and they do not understand, you know, some very basic things like allocation of capital efficiency, and trade size. You know, there are a lot of different ways to make the same type of trade. If you have a $200 stock, for example, you know, you could tie up a lot of capital by doing something that's undefined, and you might want to make that defined so that you can use, you know, a tenth or a 20th of the capital. And then if you're trading a, you know, a $15 stock or a $20 stock, you might want to do it undefined because it's cheaper than doing it defined. So I think that an understanding of capital efficiency and how to, you know, how to use your capital. And also, I mean, the biggest mistake is trade size, but not understanding capital efficiency, not understanding, you know, there's a little bit of nuance to products and trading, things like that. So I think, you know, lack of know-how, but mostly trade size.
Mostly trade size. And I guess that comes back to that old fear and greed in the markets. And that's the greed component possibly coming out there.
People love, you know, a lot of people don't like the grind. You know, to be successful in trading, just like anything else, I'm a law of large numbers freak. And you've got to do something a lot in order to, you know, be able to recognize the opportunity in that, you know. And a lot of people aren't willing to make that commitment, don't want to make that commitment. Also, a lot of people, you know, love the idea of potentially, you know, overnight success and things like that. It doesn't, you know, the truth is it doesn't really happen. There is no such thing as an overnight success. You know, for every one person that does, 100,000 people don't.
Yeah. What's that old thing I said, it takes 20 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth to that. And there's in our world, you know, I understand this. I don't think people realize how efficient markets are and how difficult it is, you know, to be successful. It's not impossible because the markets are so efficient. Every side has the same chance. Yeah. It's just, it's, you know, how willing are you to make the commitment to, you know, the industry, the space, whatever it is. And I just don't think, you know, I mean, a lot of people just don't have the time or the resources or the energy, you know, or the want to.
Yeah. It's all about a process. Yeah. At the end of most interviews, I always like to ask my guests what two or three pieces of advice they would offer to those who are starting out their trading journey. Tom Bosso is a bona fide market wizard who was interviewed in Jack Schwager's book, New Market Wizards. This was what he had to say on the topic. Last question, Tom, before we sign off is, you know, a lot of people listening to this will be retail DIY traders, starry-eyed people wanting to make a go of it. Yeah. And I know this is a difficult question because we've got limited time, but, you know, one or two pieces of advice you would give to them wanting to start out getting involved in the markets. And I know to say one or two pieces of advice is extremely limiting, but if you could, what would you say to a youngster starting out?
First thing you have to realize is that your mental process that you have towards trading is going to override every other thing you do. Your position sizing, your decision to buy or sell, what I call the buy-sell engine, which is usually driven off of an indicator of some sort or a chart pattern or whatever. All of that is going to be ultimately overridden and managed by your mental process. So I'd really work hard on things like awareness, self-confidence, self-esteem. Those types of things, I have done a good job over time of having high self-esteem, high self-confidence. I've disassociated myself from what I'm doing to a certain extent using observer self and trying to get into my mind, my own mind. Right. By doing that, it allows me to be a lot more calm and collected about what's going on. And I think that leads to repeatability. Discipline is easier. Running your strategy every day is easier. You're not so emotionally up and down and into cortisol and adrenaline and everything else that goes on inside your body. So I think you can get more longevity. I mean, I'm doing this 50 years. There's people that were in the first Market Wizard books that weren't even trading anymore 10 years later. Yeah. They either blown up or they were so stressed out, they just quit. You know, that's not my thing. I just want to keep doing what I'm doing and make it easy.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I would give advice to new traders. Work on your mental processes a lot and don't underestimate how important it is. And you'll get a jump on your career.
Fantastic.
Second thing is to realize, and a lot of new traders don't realize this. I get a lot of questions about, I want to become a CTA and I want to trade other people's monies and then, become a, multimillionaire. And that's what you did. Well, what I did back in 1970s is very, very different. We didn't even have PCs back then. We didn't have cell phones that you could trade from, and you didn't have as much jet air traffic around the world and instant communications with the internet. So you got a different world today, and it requires a very different set of skills to be successful as a CTA. I don't think you can start as an individual like I was as a CTA, basically out of your garage, if you want to look at it that way. It wasn't out of my garage, but I mean, it's out of my office, but in my house, just kind of creating a track record and getting on people's radar screens and saying, hey, this Tom guy seems to have his head screwed on straight. He's making some money. Maybe we ought to look at allocating some money to him. And once you get to certain levels, then other people start looking at you. So maybe you, back in my day, if you got to 10 million, then somebody could give you 5 million. You'd be at 15, and by the time you got to 20, 25, other people are looking at you and they can give you, 25 million. And pretty soon you're trading 600 million. And not that easy today. Now, nowadays, you need to go in with the thought of it's a business. I need 3 to 5 employees, backups. I need compliance being addressed. I need a legal budget. I need working capital. I need an office that looks suitable, that can receive due diligence officers. It's a serious starting of a business. And even then, you're not guaranteed success. If your track record sucks, you go nowhere. You market the hell out of it and you get nothing. It is a very difficult business to get into. On the other hand, trading individually has gotten almost a little easier because of the automation and the instant communications and the trading platforms. I mean, Interactive Brokers, I think, says that they have, is it 28 different offices around the world or some 23? It's some huge number. They're interconnected, all of them. And so you can get to any exchange instantaneous, trade just about anything you want. And you didn't have that world back then. I mean, back when I first started, if you want to trade futures, you got to go through a futures broker. And if you want to trade stocks, you can go to like a Merrill Lynch or one of the stock brokers. The two had nothing to do with each other. And then you're now wiring money back and forth to keep everything balanced. It was a nightmare. Today, the individual has a lot more ability to do things that they didn't have the ability to do. And I still say that the liquidity for an individual is suitable in a lot of markets, a lot more markets than the institutions can deal with. So I would seriously consider, as a new trader, trying to exploit markets that you almost know the institutions can't mess with, and get some return streams going, get some experience under your belt. Eventually, start participating in more and more markets, more and more strategies, more and more time periods. Automate it if you can, just to save yourself the menial effort. Those would be two things I'd look at right away. If I were to come up with a third one, I would say that capital and your position size is far more important than you will think it is. Back when I started out, it was just sort of, oh, I'll just buy 100 shares of the stock. I didn't care. You start realizing that, oh, no, you got to balance this out better. So then I said, oh, I could balance this. I could do 900 shares of this stock that's this price and 100 shares of the stock that is trading 9 times the price of the first one, and it'll all balance out. Well, not quite, because the volatility of each of those positions is going a different speed. So there's always going to be certain numbers or certain tickers in your portfolio that have a bigger effect on your portfolio, and others that become a non-event. And why are you bothering? So I'd encourage people to size their positions. I wrote a book on the topic. It costs all of $10 to download it and get a PDF on it. Everybody can afford it. I've downloaded thousands and thousands of copies of this book. gives you the formula. You can put it in a spreadsheet, make your life easy, always get your position. And back in the day, we used to do 100 shares. If we did 99, it was an odd lot. And then we had to deal with the extra odd lot charge. Today, with the computers, you can do 57 shares. Yeah. Computers don't care.
Yeah.
So it's so much easier to trade small amounts of money and do it efficiently and get your position sizing. It may seem very strange to a lot of people to be trading 2 shares of XYZ, but if that's the proper amount, given the way it acts in your portfolio, you want XYZ and ABC and DEF and all of these other different tickers to all sort of equal each other. So you have a portfolio. You don't have XYZ and 9 other things that don't make a difference. That's not a good way to go.
Right.
So with small amounts of money, you can do that a lot easier now with computers and with the trading platforms.
Yeah.
Those are the 3 things that come to mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic, Tom. Those are brilliant. That's superb. David Hale has been through the ringer. His book, Reminiscences of a Day Trader, goes into great detail about the raw personal ups and downs he's been through on a very turbulent journey as a trader. When I asked him about what advice he would give to his younger self, he had this to say. We're getting towards the end of our time, but I guess if you had to just give like one or two bits of advice to youngsters wanting to go out trading, and let's say you were, you know, young David Hale, you're 20 years old, you could go back and have a conversation with him. What advice would you give him?
Don't do it. No. I mean, to be honest, I mean, again, I think that is good advice for a lot of people. If you're not, you know, make sure if you're going to get into trading, make sure you have the financial, you know, the financial backing, you have, you know, something to fall back on. Of course, you have some skills. And, you know, I wouldn't, don't do it unless you have the right training or education or someone to, you know, like, and again, you know, just some random guy on Twitter is not education. You know, make sure you have proper support, proper backing, proper training. And, you know, you still realize it's going to be, a, you know, of course, it's going to be a struggle. Even if you have the best training, you have the best background, you have all these skills. It's a brutal, brutal industry. But, you know, it is possible. It is possible. It's still, you know, even the markets right now, the market stuff, there's still guys out there making money. There's still money, you know, there's still glitches in certain markets. There's still opportunities out there. But again, you have to have the right training. You have to have the right mindset. And you have to have that mindset of, big thing is, I will do whatever it takes to make money trading. You know, a lot of traders come in and go, oh, well, I'm going to do it this way. You know, I have this gift of picking what, you know, what way stocks are going to go up. I think Tesla's going up. You know, I feel like that. No. You have to find where the edge is.
Yeah.
And again, unfortunately, it's not necessarily usually the chosen path.
Yeah.
You know, this, like, you know, this glitch style of trading I'm talking about, it's not necessarily glamorous or sexy. Yeah. It's not. You know, I can't go on Twitter and go, oh yeah, I picked the bottom of Tesla. I'm such a badass. It's more, you're getting down and dirty. You know, you're scavenging, you're picking up scraps. That's where I find the most edge and the most, you know, the most inefficiencies and, you know, where you can make the money. So, you know, as a trader, you have to be willing to do that. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make money, whether it means trading this style, trading this market, trading this hour, if it means waking up at 3 a.m. because there's more edge, I'll do that. And, you know, you have, especially as a new trader, you have to do that. You have to get the screen time and you have to bust your ass. If you're not willing to do that, then, you know, don't do it.
Yeah.
Do it now. Once you make money, once you make, you know, your millions, yeah, you don't have to do that. You can do whatever you want, but you have to earn the privilege. So, you know, that's a big thing. You know, you have to find the easiest way to succeed if you want to succeed.
Right. Okay, brilliant. Fantastic. Lastly, Anthony Crudelli is a trader who has been through a tough time as well. After a heart attack at his trading desk at 36 years old, he took a relook at the way he trades and the stress he was putting himself through. When I asked him about his advice for young traders, the comment that he left me with was very powerful. You have time. Any advice for new traders? You know, there's so many youngsters coming into this game. There's these funding firms offering people the opportunity to get involved and fund their, you know, it's really become so much more accessible to people than it was when you and I were starting out our careers, I guess. But what advice would you give to a youngster now starting in this business, saying that, and obviously there's loads of advice you could give and we don't have that much time, but I mean, if you could give one crucial piece of advice to a youngster who wants to make a career out of trading, what would it be?
You have time. You have time. You may not think you have time. You may not feel like you have time. Right now, the only thing you're focused on is results. The only thing you're thinking about is, what do I need to do to become consistent? What do I need to do to get myself out of this hole? What do I need to do today to make money? And your mind is so focused on the now that you can't see beyond what today is and look into the future. But the future gets there a lot quicker. Your goals get reached a lot quicker when you start to shift your mindset from focusing on the now and what you feel like you need to do. And when you stop focusing on day-to-day results and you start harnessing that energy and focusing on process. I talk about my morning note and why every day I'm working so much harder on my preparation. Because for you as a new trader, your preparation is going to be the key to your success. Because if you start coming in and get better at preparing and you get better at your process, you will get better at executing it and you will become more patient. You will become more disciplined. And when you start to think long-term about process and start to think long-term about your vision of yourself as a trader, your short-term results will get better quicker. But most people don't want to do that. They only want to think about the now. They're so focused on it, but you have time. Believe me, you have time.
What a great answer. You know, I ask a lot of guests that question, and that's brilliant. I mean, it just, you've got time, and it's so true. Yeah, time is the greatest asset that you can have. When you're young, you've got lots of it.
Yeah, you do, buddy. And you don't believe it until so many years go by. And I look at myself now, I'm 46. I feel like yesterday I was 26. And if I would have thought this way back then, I would have made a lot more money. I would have made better decisions. Not that I'm unhappy with where I'm at. It has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
The point is that I put myself through a lot more pain than I needed to because I couldn't slow things down. Mm-hmm. I was in a big rush. I wanted everything. And it just took a lot longer because I wanted everything so much quicker.
Yeah. It reminds me of that. I don't know if it's like a metaphor, but the farmer that goes out at night and tugs at his crops goes hungry. And it's kind of what you're saying, right? Just allow the time to do its work. Don't force it.
That's right, man.
Well, that's a wrap for 2024. All that's left is for me to thank you for listening to this podcast over the past year. Thanks to IG for their continued sponsorship. Have a wonderful festive season. If you're traveling over this time, please travel safely. And I look forward to bringing you more insightful conversations in 2025. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Talking with Traders, sponsored by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a strong global provider of online trading services as our backer for this podcast series. Remember to subscribe for more episodes by clicking on the subscribe button of your favorite podcast app. Or if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, give us a thumbs up, and leave a comment. We welcome the engagement. Till next time.